The Final Four is set. The tournament that never, ever disappoints. Thrillers left and right. LSU baseball, when all were doubting, goes into Starkville and wins 2 out of 3. Never count a Paul Maneri club out. And this just in. Nick Saban's representation has let prominent LSU people know he wants to come back and end his coaching career in Tigertown. Today, Monday, April Fool's Day, 2019.
Driving, Harper into the lane, shot up, good! Great move by Jarrett Harper down the lane. It's Auburn with their biggest lead, on top by 7.
Tillman has to back it out. Goins, open 3, left wing, got it! The 3 falls for Kenny Goins! Michigan State, 68, Duke 66 with 30 seconds to go.
Pearl's pitch.
Swing and a high fly ball deep right field, and that one is back. Farkakis looking up, and it's gone. Powering home run by Bryce Harper. Second in as many nights. Second of the year. 4-1, Phillies lead it.
Well, hello. That's about the best April Fool's joke I can come up with. Well, I hope you're having a good one. If you've been pranked, well, okay, great. But it's great to be with you on a beautiful Chamber of Commerce Monday, April the 1st, the year 2019. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB, and Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. The SEC made a concerted effort 3 years ago to improve the quality of basketball in a league forever known for football, and it's paid off. With Auburn off to the Final Four after beating Kentucky in overtime on Sunday, the SEC earned at least $32.1 million through the NCAA system for paying conferences based on how their teams perform in the men's basketball tournament. Make no mistake about it, the tournament never, ever, ever disappoints. And we're down to 4. The opener, Saturday at about 5 o'clock. Auburn, a 5 seed, takes on number 1 seeded Virginia. And in the nightcap, number 2 seeded Michigan State takes on 3 seeded Texas Tech. LSU's basketball season comes to an end. No longer do we have the distraction of games coming up to take us off what's really going on. And that is a program that doesn't have a rudder right now. We don't know where it's going, who's running it, who's guiding it, who's going to be on the ship. We just don't know. And Joe Oliva keeps saying no comment to anyone who asks him. Big decisions to be made. April 22nd is the day of the federal trial, of which Will Wade has been subpoenaed. Is there a plea bargain working? I have no idea. I have no idea what's going on with it. All I know is players don't know who their coach is. Players don't know if they want to come back without knowing who their coach is. Recruits don't know who's going to be coaching LSU. It is a mess. It is an absolute mess. And we'll talk with Amy Just of NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. She was in our nation's capital for that Sweet 16 game. All I can say about the Sweet 16 game was I think you saw the effect of a young team without their true head coach. And this is not a knock on Tony Benford in any way, shape, or form. I think we should be doing just the opposite and thanking him for the job he did. Kept that team together, kept them closer than ever together, and they battled through and they won two games in the tournament. Then they came up against a Hall of Fame coach with a team with veterans on it that have been there and done that. And that says an awful lot. And they came and punched LSU in the face to an 8-0 start. LSU trailed by 12. LSU did make an 8-0 run to start the second half. They got it to within 4, and then, boom, Michigan State said, enough of this. And they go on their own 11-0 run, and the game was over. Game was over. Decisions will have to be made. Tremont Waters was spectacular. I don't know if he can do anything more in his college career to improve his chances of being drafted. And I know that there will be those that talk about size, but dude can ball. He can ball. I'm not a big sold on Naz Reid. I'm just not. He does not dominate games consistently enough on the collegiate level. I know the NBA drafts on potential, and I know that potential is there. I just wish the kid would stay, but how can I ask the kid to stay when he doesn't know who his coach is going to be? And just because there's a trial coming up on the 22nd of April, that doesn't mean this thing's going to end. How long does this take? I don't have a clue. And I think what LSU or Will Wade is hoping is there's so many schools involved in this thing that they can't fire all the coaches and put them all on probation. They just have to have a message being sent by this. I don't know. I do not know. But I do know this. Man, that NCAA tournament is something else. It is something else. I know CBS is dying. Because, boy, they wanted Duke in there. And on one side of the bracket, they wanted either North Carolina or Kentucky in there. They really did. But they've got now a 1 seed, a 2 seed, a 3 seed, and the Auburn Tigers are a 5 seed. And there's a whole bunch of LSU fans out there that are going, see, Bruce Pearl didn't talk to his athletic director, and people don't care because they're in the Final Four. Well, think what you might. Think what you might. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. Really good games, huh? How good were those games? My goodness gracious. You feel for Purdue. What a game. What effort. My goodness gracious. Michigan State ending Zion's run and reign in the NCAA tournament. In Virginia, just figuring out a way and just making the play of the tournament on a missed free throw tap out. Just remarkable. 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 It never stops. It never, ever ceases to amaze me. So I guess in summation, for the LSU basketball season, look, the second most wins in program history. 28. We got him at 31. We got him at 31 back in 1980. A great run, a fun run. Michigan State was just a better team. No question, no doubt about it. And they were the better team on that day. And that's all that really matters. It's not like the NBA when you play the best 4 out of 7. It just doesn't matter. But a superb season, really. Unbeaten on the road in the SEC. Wins at Kentucky and Tennessee. They brought people back to Pete's Palace. All after things started off with the tragic loss of Wade Sims and then the Will Wade debacle. And that could have ruined the season for many, many others. But it didn't. LSU manned up. Won the SEC title. Won 2 games in the NCAA tournament with a very, very young team. So give Tony Benford and his staff all the credit for keeping that team together, to keeping that team focused. Not easily done. But LSU was out-rebounded by men by men, 21-10 in the first half, including 10 offensive rebounds. State went 7-for-17 from behind the arc. LSU was just 2-for-9. They were terrific in the first half. And their 21 assists in the game to just 8 for LSU was a telltale sign. All season long, LSU's strength was rebounding, particularly offensive rebounding, while its weakness was three-point shooting, and they lost both categories, and the result was rather predictable. For those who want to insert, Will Wade would have made a difference argument, well, forget it. Not on that night. Not against that opponent. But now comes the aftermath, and the reality of, is there an impending change? Are there possible sanctions? We'll see. We'll see. Let's hope the worst of it subsides, if there is the worst, subsides quickly. And then hopefully we have not seen the best of LSU basketball yet. All I can tell you is from this perspective, right here in this chair with this microphone, we hadn't talked a lick about spring football. Because basketball has captivated the headlines. And that is a good, good thing. Now it's over. And now it's spring football with the spring game this Saturday and LSU baseball. We shall see. We'll hear from some of the Tigers, and we'll set the stage for the rest of the program when we return. It's Monday. No fooling. No fooling. And we'll be back after these important messages on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour. Welcome back, boys and girls. 337-706-0111. 706-0111. If you have an opinion, you can email me, askjordy@gmail.com. Askjordy@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at JHS1037. It's day 25, in case you're counting, day 25 of the Will Wade suspension. How about that? And they may not beat Nick Saban, but Auburn is the first university from the state of Alabama to send a men's basketball team to the Final Four. And Toomer's Corner was never rolled better than after they beat Kentucky. And look, they beat the Blue Bloods of the Blue Bloods. They beat Kansas, then they beat North Carolina, and then they beat Kentucky to get to the Final Four. I mean, that is something. It really is. That is something. LSU baseball wins 2 out of 3 against Mississippi State in Starkville. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, will join us in hour number 2, and we'll talk a little bit more baseball around the SEC, Major League Baseball talk with our good friend Ben McDonald. That's coming up in hour number 2. It was, believe it or not, we'd always do a little history lesson at the end of the show. And today, I'm just going to do one a little sooner because it was 7 years ago today that Bobby Petrino got into a motorcycle accident when he was the head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. And at first, we thought, we all thought it was an April Fool's joke, but it kicked off a series of events that the Arkansas football program has been unable to recover from. And when you think, oh, just amazing, amazing. 7 years ago today, amazing. All right, so back to LSU basketball. I think we need to compliment Tony Benford. He's not going to be the head coach of LSU basketball. I can promise you that. He's in all likelihood going to go to Texas A&M after Texas A&M gets Buzz Williams from Virginia Tech, because A&M will pay him in a commensurate salary as to what Jimbo Fisher's making for college football. And Virginia Tech can't hang with that. So A&M wants him, A&M will get him, because A&M will outpay Buzz Williams. And Tony Benford and Buzz Williams have a history at Marquette together. And that's my guess as to where that's going. But after the loss Friday evening to the Michigan State Spartans that ended the Tigers' season in the Sweet 16, Tony Benford had an opening statement to the media.
First of all, I want to give Coach Izzo and his team a lot of credit. They came out the first half, and they established they really did a good job establishing the paint, and especially on the glass. We knew it was going to be a game of who can control the glass, and they did a great job in the first half and throughout the game getting on the glass.
Out rebounded them 21-10 in the first half, and 10 of those 21 were offensive rebounds. They just couldn't stop them. Couldn't stop them. Tremont Waters did his best to keep LSU in the game. 23 points, but just 2 assists on the ball game. He talked about the jump from his freshman year to his sophomore year, the personal growth that he had from last season throughout this season.
Last year, I was able to lead by example more than leading by or through word of mouth and actually talking to the guys and talking to film and stuff like that. This year I have had a much bigger role, and I had great teammates behind me that allowed me to grow as a person outside of basketball also, and just to have such great guys around me and the coaching staff allowing me to have a voice on the team and to become even more of a leader was the biggest thing, I feel like.
Goes down as one of the greats. He really was a tremendous player. Now, he talked about, and it's hard, right after a loss that ends your season, he talked about his future.
Well, we're going to take it one day at a time. Obviously, we don't know what's going on, and we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing, stay in the gym, and pretty much talk to our families and see what the next step is.
If Joe Oliva had any sense of loyalty to the public, those people that spend their hard-earned money and go and watch these games, who have such an interest in LSU basketball, he should come on this show. He should go on television. He should issue a statement about what's going on with this basketball program. What's his thought process on this? He doesn't have to get, point blank specific and take us behind the closed door meetings that have been taking place. But he ought to come out with a statement that says, look, I know you're concerned. Here's where we are, and here's what we plan on doing. If you want to see, you want Will Wade to be your head coach, and you wanted to go through the proceedings that are about to happen, then say it. If you want to say Will Waits will not talk with us, and so we are contemplating what direction we need to go in, say it. But say something. Say something, please. I talked about Naz Reid. I firmly am of the opinion that it would behoove him greatly to come back for another season of college basketball. There is great potential there, and that's what the NBA goes by, but I think it would be even better for him to have another season of college basketball under his belt rather than go to the NBA and go playing in the G League. That's just me. That's his decision to make. He was he finished with 10 points and 9 rebounds, but his shot selection was poor. Too many turnovers. He was 0 for 5 from three-point range, and he was manhandled on the glass. And he talked about how the Tigers just gave up too many offensive rebounds.
It was very frustrating. I mean, we didn't realize it until second half, they were long rebounds. So, you know, we were going into the charge circle trying to rebound long rebounds, and they're going over our heads and, you know, just missed checkouts and things like that. I mean, they wanted it more, and they got them.
They wanted it more, and they got them. That's a team that's been there and done that. Veterans, the rookies, that's a tough, tough thing. It really is. Ask Duke. Duke with a young club. So what happened against Michigan State? Albeit closer, but you saw the end result. So such uncertainty, such bewilderment. I'm asked every day, multiple times, what's going to happen? What's going on? And I say to them, as I say to you, I have no clue. Nobody's saying anything. Nobody's talking about it, at least not to the loyal LSU fans and family. And hey, that's the way they want to do it. That's their prerogative. But we know that Will Wade has said, I'm not talking to LSU until after the hearing. Can LSU afford to wait that long? What if he's exonerated and there is nothing wrong? That is the conundrum facing LSU. That's my opinion. Amy Just, who was there, saw the emotions of this LSU basketball team after the loss, showed the emotions after their wins, the happiness, the joy. Now reality set in, okay? The ride is over. They got to go to class. They got to make decisions. What will some of those decisions be? We'll knock it around with Amy next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. We're on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Hey, we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. We've been talking LSU basketball, the unknowns that face this program. Amy Just, good friend of the program, covers the Tigers, round ballers for NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. She's been in that locker room with the highest of highs and now the lowest of lows. Amy, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you very much for your time, as always. So there's no more games to talk about to take our mind off of all the major issues facing this program. Sum up the season and how you think these Tigers did in your first year of covering them. What was it like for you?
It was a wild ride. There were, you know, the highest of highs, like you said, you know, beating Kentucky and Rupp Arena for the first time in 10 years, beating Tennessee a week later, and the lows of the lows, obviously, you know, losing to Michigan State by double digits in the Sweet 16 and an ugly loss to a really bad team back in November against Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. And that's just on the court, you know. You have heartbreak.
Yes.
You have heartbreak before the season with losing Wade Sims. You have, you know, just so many different scandals coming up with all of them. Of course, you know, Will Wade, you know, mm-hmm. the first thing came up before the season even started at SEC Media Days, and then more stuff would incrementally come up as the season progressed. And it was, you know, right when you had started to forget about it, it came back to light.
Yes.
And that paired with, there were several injuries over the course of the season. You know, Naz Reid missed a game, you know, when he was hurt. And mm-hmm. Tremont Waters missed a couple games when he was sick. And even Emmett Williams was hurt for a game. And you had two guys transfer out of the program during the season.
Right.
One for, you know, a medical issue, and then another one had another medical issue, and he's hoping to, that one, Daryl Edwards, is hoping to get his, you know, one last year of eligibility at Nevada. And yeah, that's the short version of it. You know, some of these things you even forget happens.
I'm with you. Amy, I've been around LSU basketball for a long, long, long time, and there have been some crazy moments with crazy issues. But I think for an entire season, this one stands out. Nothing quite like this has ever happened to LSU basketball. And now everybody's wondering, I call it a ship without a rudder. Where does this program go? What's going on? People want to know what is the administration doing? What are you hearing, if anything? Because I'm not hearing a peep out of this thing.
I'm not either. I'm good. Interim coach Tony Benford is waving at me right now.
There you go.
But no, I really don't. I don't know. But what is the answer to that? I don't really know. It's wild that, you know, no one knows what's going on. No one does. And like everybody listening, I am eager to find out what happens too.
So many decisions have to be made, because how long does this administration wait? Because so many things are involved here. Players have to make decisions. Recruits have to make decisions. They're kind of in a conundrum here, and I really don't have an answer as to what they do. Because I believe they want Will Wade to be their coach. But just because this federal trial starts April 22nd, I think, doesn't mean it's going to end April 22nd. It may go on and on and on. So what do they do?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. This is a very unique situation, and nobody really knows what's going on, and that's not good for recruits. That's not good for the players in your program. That's not good for the coaches on your staff, your fans, your boosters. It's not good for anybody. And yeah, I mean, everybody just has to sit and wait, but nobody likes to be patient. I know I don't.
No, me neither. Me neither. Amy just kind enough to join us here. The close of an LSU basketball season, SEC champion, regular season champion, the second most wins in the program's history at 28, and yet so many unanswered questions. Take me to the locker room afterwards. You got a chance to talk to players. We heard Tremont Waters say we're just going to take it day by day. Javonte Smart, who? Naz Reid. I don't know. I don't even know where to go with this. Do you think they'll be back? Do you think any of them will come back?
Skylar Mays will be back. that's the only thing that I'm latching onto right now. Skylar Mays and Marshall Graves will likely be back. But other than that, I do not know what's going to happen. And a lot of this comes back to that core issue, right, of what happens with Will Wade. And if they get rid of Will Wade, who do they hire after that? You know, a lot of it will depend on that. Because, I mean, a lot of the young guys in this program came to LSU because of Will Wade. So
Correct. If
Will Wade's not here, do they transfer? You know, do we see guys like Emmett Williams and Darius Days go elsewhere? You know, what do we see the younger redshirt guys do, like Andre and Cortez Cooper? Do they transfer as well? You know, what we don't really know what is going to happen, and it's going to be interesting to follow just because no one knows what the ultimate fallout of this is going to be.
And if Will Wade is terminated as the coach at LSU, Emmett Williams, Darius Days, they can transfer and go wherever they want and play right away. Isn't that correct?
You have to petition for it, but you would believe that they would waive that. Just like, and there are two guys who have already signed their national letters of intent to come play here. And you would think that those players, if they would like to get out of those, they would be allowed to do so as well. Just like Tremont Waters in the Georgetown situation when he was going through all of that.
So it's really the old proverbial between a rock and a hard place. I am absolutely, the more and more I think about it, the more and more mystified I am by this entire thing. And this could, I mean, how long can LSU wait? I just don't know. It's just the weirdest thing I don't think they can wait long. I really don't. And the other thing is, if they do, and they do find cause to terminate Will Wade, who are you going to get to coach? Who's going to walk into this thing?
And,
you know, who? All the good coaches may already be hired.
Yeah, I don't know. Will Wade has been suspended for 25 days, and the FBI trial doesn't start until April 22nd. So if they're waiting for that, I don't know. I don't. And I don't think anybody does. And I know I don't sound like the, you know, most informed person on this right now, but nobody knows.
No,
or
I'm with
the people
you.
Who do know are not willing to talk about it. And, well, I guess, you know, we just have to find out what happens. And I know that sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's true. You know, nobody really knows what's going on. And it's hard to talk about stuff because you just feel like you're throwing stuff at a wall and hope it sticks.
Yeah. What do you think LSU's thought process is here? Because they've got to be thinking along the same lines that we are. If we wait too long for this thing and the worst comes out, we're really behind the eight ball. And this may set us back and sanctions are coming. But if we get proactive, what if Will Wade is exonerated? Then we face a lawsuit. We, you know, all this kind of stuff. That's got to be what they're thinking, right?
Yeah, that decision is far above my pay grade. But oh my goodness, yeah, it's a mess. I've never seen anything like this before, and I hope to never see something like this again.
Yeah, neither I. No question. Let's get on to more positive things. Because this weekend, LSU gymnastics is back in the fray. They get to host the regional in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. Okay. You talk to Dee Dee Brough and several of her gymnasts. Man, what a program. Maybe, just maybe, this is the year she finally breaks through the door and wins the whole darn thing, because I don't think there's a hotter team in the country than they are right here, right now.
No. I mean, UCLA is really good, and that's going to be their main competition going forward for sure as they get to nationals. But they have to make it through the first two rounds here at the regional this weekend first. So they compete against three other teams on Friday. And then if they're in the top two from that pod, then they advance to Saturday night, which is the same day as the spring game. So it's going to be a long day for everybody. Wow. But then the top two from that advance to Fort Worth for nationals. Okay. So it's going to be tough, but they'll get there, I think. I think they're really good. I don't know if this is the year for a national title, but if any team's going to do it, it's going to be this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so that's Friday. Saturday at the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. I don't think there's any question. They're too hot. They'll get the thing done. So Tony Benford waved to you, huh? Apparently,
yeah,
according to his comments.
Outside at Starbucks.
According to his comments, he was going to go meet with the administration to see what direction, you know, who's guiding this thing? What do you want us to do? Do you want us to start looking for new jobs? Do you want us to keep this club together? What do you want us to do? And that's up to Joe Oliva and those in charge of the basketball program to kind of figure out. I mean, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I feel bad for them. I do. They're in a tough spot. They're in a tough spot.
Everybody. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm with you. All right. I just wanted to, share some things with you and bounce it around a little bit, because in all honesty, we can speculate, but I really can't even do that because I don't have a proverbial clue as to what is going on and what to anticipate here. I just know it is the most unique, the most confounding dilemma that I've ever been around with LSU athletics. And I was there for the Les Miles situation and that fumbling, bungling thing. But this mm-hmm. tops that. This tops that all.
It's wild. There's no doubt about it. Yeah,
right, well,
I just don't know. I'm at a loss for words, too.
Well, you go get that one-on-one with Joe Oliva, and we'll read all about it, okay?
All right, I'll do my best. We'll see what happens.
Amy, welcome back. Thanks for your help. We greatly appreciate it. You take care.
All right. You too. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay. So, again, look, let's have the scale here. Will Wade's not saying anything under advice of his attorney. He's going to go to that, maybe he's going to go to that trial, or maybe they're plea bargaining, or who knows? Who knows? LSU's like, what do we do? What do we do? Is he? It certainly appears that he's guilty because he's not talking to us. If he weren't guilty, why wouldn't he? In the meantime, we got to try and keep all these players from abandoning ship, because if we don't, we're not going to have a basketball team. We're not going to have one. Everybody's going to bail, jump ship. And then what do we do? What do we tell these coaches? Because when the Final Four comes, all the coaches go there. And that's where coaches start looking for jobs. Do we tell them, no, sit tight, don't go anywhere? Well, that's not fair. And if I were those coaches, I wouldn't. I'd be looking around. I'd have my resume. Hey, every dog for himself now. LSU doesn't want to have to pay off Will Wade. They want to have a cause for termination. Meanwhile, you got these recruits out there, two that have already committed to you. The signing date's coming up in April. What do you do with them? How do you recruit anybody? How do you field a team to compete in the SEC? I don't know. I've never, ever, ever seen anything like this. And just like Amy said, I have no answers for anyone. It is the most confounding scenario I could ever imagine with basketball, ever. Your thoughts, your suggestions, your input, greatly, greatly warranted, greatly appreciated if you want to. 337-706-0111. 337-706-0111. Les Miles getting carried off the field, knowing he was fired, and then getting a stay of execution when F. King Alexander told Joe Oliva, not going to happen. Joe Oliva doesn't have any power. It's the president and the board of supervisors, and he's doing what they're telling him, and the lawyers are telling them. It is a dog chasing after its own tail. It is a circle going round and round and round with no end in sight. We'll be back. Wrap up hour number one next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hilfiger Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 52 minutes after the hour. Good to be Devin White these days. The former LSU linebacker has three pre-NFL draft visits set with the Tampa Bay Bucks, the New York Giants, and the Cincinnati Bengals. Of those three teams, Tampa Bay has the highest pick at number 5. The Giants have the 6th overall pick. Cincy has the number 11 overall pick. How about that? And from the I never thought I'd see the day category, apparently, according to NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, Roger Goodell and Sean Payton worked together to get the rule change that was that transpired last week about the pass interference, non-pass interference call. They worked together. And we're quite pleased together for the rule change that allows pass interference calls and non-calls to be challenged by coaches. Pretty good deal. Never thought I'd see that day. You know, these four teams that have made it to the Final Four, UVA, Michigan State, Texas Tech, and Auburn, they are contrary to what so many of the other powerhouse college basketball teams are all about. The one-and-done programs like Kentucky and Duke, did not make it to the Final Four. All these other teams have high-powered freshmen, but also program players, players who are in their third or fourth year. It's called player development, and that's why these coaches are so good. Chris Pearl is just, I mean, Bruce Pearl is like the second coming of Jim Valvano to me. Pure emotion, coaching with emotion, getting into the players' hearts and heads and just coaching with fire and enthusiasm, quite the contrary to his counterpart in the national semifinals in Tony Bennett of Virginia, who is so calm, so cool, so collected. Then you got the fire. Oh, by the way, Tom Izzo's in the Final Four. And, yeah, he did scream at one of his players. Didn't hurt them very much. And Chris Beard, just a tremendous coach who has paved his way through the ranks to get to where he is. Such a hot commodity. Somebody's going to come after him. Somebody's coming after him. And we'll see if he stays at Texas Tech or if he... It's hard to win in Lubbock. And it's amazing how he's done it with a bunch of JUCO transfers and program transfers that came in. And he's blended it. And all four of these teams bring an awful lot to the table. Auburn, by far, the most fun to watch. By far. They use their size or lack thereof and their quickness to their ability. And if they're making shots, they're going to win the whole thing. I said it earlier, and I'll say it again. I've only got one team in the Final Four, only one, and that's the team I thought that would win the whole thing, and that's Virginia, and I'm sticking to it. I think they've got a little bit of everything, and I think they've gone through enough suffering that the basketball gods are going to smile upon them. But these are all programs that don't have the one-and-dones. Says something about it. Says a lot about it. So I think Michigan State, Texas Tech is going to be a whale of a game. A whale of a game. And I just think UVA, for some reason, I don't know why, I just don't, but something tells me that they're going to win the semifinal against Auburn and then beat whoever is out on the other side. But four very, very deserving teams, and Virginia with the most unlikely of wins, the way they did it and how they did it against Purdue was just, I thought, the game of the tournament. The game, it was just sensational. It's the event that just never disappoints. It really doesn't. You couldn't ask for more, better Elite Eight games. You couldn't. They were all just dynamic, edge of the seat stuff. I only hope when they get to Minneapolis that these next two games are along the same lines. Wow. And LSU basketball, I don't know. Never seen anything like it. Never. Both are in the corners. And I don't know what's going to happen from here. I know what's going to happen in hour number two. We're going to have hot topics, and we're going to talk LSU baseball and more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. No fooling around here. I know it's April 1st, and I know you're pranking people, but I'm just not good at it. So we're just going to shoot it to you straight. LSU basketball is in a conundrum. I don't know what's going to happen with them. And LSU baseball faces a huge opportunity this week as they've got five games, including three SEC matchups against the division-leading Texas A&M Aggies. And with that in mind, we do it every day at this time of day. CD, let's take our daily walk around the water cooler. Let's hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Ah, you see, I thought you were going to call me this morning and say, Jordy, we're having some technical issues and we're off the air. You got no show today. And I would have gone, what? I thought you were going to prank me today. But you're a good producer. You did not do that. So thank you.
Hey, you're more than welcome, Jordy. I mean, mind you, I couldn't top the one you had at the beginning of the show about Nick Saban coming back to be the head coach of the LSU Tigers. That I don't think anybody could wind up topping that one. But Jordy, you were out in D.C. over the weekend. You know, how was that at our nation's capital?
It was good for a while, and then the game started, and then it wasn't so good, and then I got my fanny back home. So it just was a better team on that certain day, and that was all she wrote. That was it.
Yeah, it was just a tough break for the LSU Tigers against Michigan State. Right from the jump, I mean, it was, like a 5-0 run within the 8-0 run.
8-0.
Within 2 minutes of the ball game. That is just not how you wind up winning ball games.
No.
But, you know, it got me thinking, especially after everything that happened on Sunday, wrapping it up with the Final Four. My goodness, Jordy, is this like the weirdest weirdest Final Four you've ever seen?
If anybody's got this Final Four from their bracket from the start, God bless you. No, I can't imagine anybody predicting this. I guess I think people weren't surprised by UVA, but what's the bigger surprise? It's got to be Auburn. How does Auburn go through the gauntlet of blue bloods? They beat Kansas, then they beat North Carolina, and then they beat Kentucky. Now, how about that road to the Final Four? Nobody expected that. Nobody.
I think nobody expected, especially after you have Okiki get hurt in the Elite Eight matchup against UNC. Like, up against Kentucky, they hadn't won against Kentucky in an away or a neutral game since 1988. But you're talking about, there's no way anybody picked it. Well, apparently, according to the Four Letter Network, their tournament challenge entries, they had 17.2 million of them, Jordy. And 7,928 correctly predicted Virginia, Michigan State, Texas Tech, and Auburn.
Wow.
All in that Final Four. That is amazing, Jordy.
That's people that are putting in 500 brackets, and they're doing it via some kind of computer log algorithm, and it's just spitting stuff out. I just cannot fathom that at all. I just can't.
Exactly, Jordan. It's crazy to think that we're just talking about Texas Tech in the Final Four. That's the weirdest one of them all, Jordan. We're talking about Auburn. I think Texas Tech is definitely up there in that list of the weirdest one of them all because, honestly, Texas Tech just didn't impress me all that much throughout the tournament, especially in their game on Thursday night where it was just a slog fest.
Yeah. Well, they just keep winning. They just keep winning. And I just feel – I thought the best game of the tournament was UVA and Purdue. Carson Edwards was just off the charts, on fire, and the improbability of Virginia doing what they did with the missed free throw tap back and then the wherewithal to, instead of just launching one from three-quarter court, to finding a teammate who catches and releases immediately and makes it to send it to overtime. That was just – what a spectacular game. And Carson Edwards, my goodness. What a shooter. Crazy good. All the games were great. All of them were great.
They really were, Jordy. I mean, everything was great over the weekend. On Saturday and Sunday, you had the Auburn-Kentucky game go to overtime. That was entertaining as all get out.
Yep.
And speaking of Kentucky, Jordy, reports are coming out, and this is not an April Fool's joke. Repeat, it is not an April Fool's joke, Jordy. Coach Cal apparently getting offered a lifetime contract to try and avoid him jumping ship to UCLA. Is that crazy, Jordy, offering Coach Cal a lifetime contract? And that's not an April Fool's joke.
That is crazy. I don't understand what that means. Is he going to get paid $9 million a year for the rest of his life? I've got to see the wording of that. I got to see how that works. But look, I mean, the Kentucky fans are a different breed. A lot of them will consider this a failure of a season, getting to the Elite Eight. That's not good enough for them. It's just a lifetime, really? I don't know how that works.
Yeah,
good for him.
I don't know how it works either, Jordy, honestly. I've been trying to get a lifetime contract over here for a long time. I mean, but the Coach Cal getting one over with the Kentucky Wildcats,
You can't talk Chuck Wood into giving you a lifetime contract? Are you kidding me? Come on.
But I think we can all agree, Jordy. I think Antoine Duplantis definitely deserves a lifetime contract. What he's been able to do, especially this past weekend in Starkville, he had been in a slump for a while, finally got out of it, a couple home runs here and there. It was just nice to see in Starkville. But how impressive was Antoine Duplantis over the weekend?
Very impressive. I think putting him at the leadoff spot just kind of juiced him up a little bit, because that's the first batter, right? And you get more fastballs that first at bat, and he just grooved them. And so good for him. What an outstanding student athlete he is. And it was good to see Eddie Furness at the ball games, because you got two great hitters, Magnum for State and Duplantis for LSU. And, of course, Furness is the all-time hits leader in the SEC. But I think that's going bye-bye. This season.
Oh, exactly, Jordy. It's going bye-bye, be it Antoine Duplantis or Cenk Mangum. And I was actually talking about it over the weekend with Brett Hudson, who does some stuff out in Starkville. And I asked him who he thought was going to wind up passing up Eddie Furness first. Is it going to be Mangum or is it going to be Duplantis? So I'll throw that question your way as well.
Duplantis, I'm the home guy. I'm the local guy. I want the Acadiana's finest to pass it and not be surpassed for a long, long time. So I'm all for it.
Oh, yeah, Jordy. It's going to be tough, though, because Mangum definitely has not cooled off at all. I think Duplantis' slump definitely made it a little bit tougher. But if he's able to keep this going and be as consistent as he was, maybe not have a 3-for-4 day every single day, because that's damn near impossible, but having a 2-for-4 type day, a 3-for-5 here and there, you can wind up getting back into contention before long. But Jordy, I gotta talk about this. I know you're busy watching all the Elite Eight stuff, but did you wind up catching some of the match play going on in the PGA Tour? And Tiger Woods and his crazy shot from his knees, Jordy, from his knees, and be able to get it on the green.
I saw the highlights of that. That was amazing. I saw Sergio go bonkers and miss a putt before he was told it's a gimme, pick it up. So, he went a little crazy. But no, Tiger. How often do you see Tiger miss a 4-foot putt to either tie or win a match? That hardly ever happens. But 2 weeks away from Augusta, baby, so we'll see.
Exactly. And you got to think this is probably a good sign in the right direction, just because he's able to pull off these kind of crazy shots, that maybe Tiger is really back full go and he's pretty much a strong favorite to be a Masters choice.
I'm ready.
Your choice to win.
I'm ready. Let's go. Let's go. Let's get it on. I would love to see Tiger win that thing. Love it.
Who wouldn't want to see that?
Love it more than anything.
Exactly, Jordy. Yes. That'd be huge. Seeing him back in the Masters. I know a lot of people are going to wind up picking him. And hey, if you want to give your pick to click for the Masters, go to 1037thegame.com. We got a Masters pick'em going on.
You
can pick your winner, of course, if there's multiple ones. We'll wind up doing a little raffle to where if you win, you get a pretty nice gift card to golfballs.com off of Arnold Boulevard. Just some awesome stuff going on. Once again, go to 1037thegame.com to check it out. Just a cheap show right there, Jordy.
Go ahead, Clint. Just get that read in there, big guy. Nice. Nice. So who you got winning the whole thing? I got Virginia. Who you got?
Oh, Jordy, I got to go with Michigan State. You got to go with the last guardian. As Tom Izzo put it before the LSU-Michigan State game, the guardian of college basketball, I got to go with Izzo winning.
All right, we'll see. I think that's who's going to be in the finals, Michigan State and UVA. I got the Hoos winning it all. We'll see. All right, there's your Hot Topics for the day. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce every day. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. LSU baseball wins 2 out of 3 in the most improbable of places. We'll find out how and why next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana's Sports Station. 1037 The Game.
we welcome you back as the calendar has turned to April. Yes, indeed. And LSU baseball surprised me. I got to be honest with you. They surprised me by winning 2 out of 3 in Starkville against maybe the team that was the hottest team in the country at the time, Mississippi State. Brody Miller covers the Tigers and is kind enough to join us now. Brody, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Jordy. How are you doing today?
I'm terrific, man. I thank you for the time. Are you in the same lane as I am? Were you surprised at LSU winning 2 out of 3?
I mean, obviously I'd be lying if I said I wasn't surprised. I did, like, and this isn't like me claiming I'm smart or anything, but I had this just kind of weird gut feeling that, like, hey, just knowing how pulmonary teams work, if they're ever going to figure it out, it's going to come in this series on the road when things seem worse than ever. That's just like how things work with him, right? So I did just have this odd gut feeling, but no, from a pure rational point of view, I'm completely surprised, yes.
Antoine Duplantis takes the leadoff spot, hits some home runs. They keep searching for the formula, right? And they keep giving, they move people around, and his performance. And what can you say about C.J. Willis? I mean, here's the opportunity. Carpe diem, seize it.
Yeah, I mean, for starters, with Antoine and just kind of moving the lineup around. Yeah, I think there's, you know, I think that the season has already proven with a few different lineup changes that, you know, just sometimes it's just changing the frame of mind around that bat. You know, it's just, you know, I mean, I think, I wonder how, because Antoine Duplantis has admitted a few times that, you know, he kind of caught himself a few times in early March or late February when he was hitting these home runs, kind of popping out too much and things like that. And I wonder if, you know, being in that leadoff spot just kind of changes his frame of mind about that bat. And it's just, hey, get on base, get on base, get on base. Mm-hmm. And that kind of frees him to be the slap singles hitter that he naturally is, although he hit a few more homers. But I think the homers come from him not trying to hit homers.
Right.
And then with C.J. Willis, I mean, yeah, that is the big surprise of the weekend and the big storyline of the weekend, 100%. And, you know, I will say I'm smart. C.J. Willis was, of all the freshmen in this class, you know, aside from the pitchers maybe, he was the one guy I really was just all in on. I just really liked his athleticism, his frame, you know, just kind of his style at the plate. I was going into this offseason, I was all in on C.J. Willis to be, like, you know, the star freshman of this class. I was very wrong the first month and a half. You know, he wasn't just not contributing much. He was the last position player on the bench pretty much. I mean, he didn't touch the field. I think pinch hit 5, maybe 6 times all year.
Yeah.
I think Pulmonary was just flat out on him, you know, at least for the time being. And then I think he just wanted to, you know, spark things in the lineup on a rough night and just say, hey, let's give somebody new a shot in a pinch hitting role. Hits an RBI double. And, you know, as you know, somebody steps up in a situation like that, Pulmonary is going to reward him and kind of run with the hot hand. And, yeah. I mean, he did just that. 3 for 8 on the weekend, 5 RBIs, 2 walks. I mean, and a lot of his at-bats, even his outs, were just productive. You know, he works counts well. He put balls where they need to be. I mean, granted, it's a small sample size, and we'll see what happens down the road, but that is a huge sign for at least the depth of this team.
Yeah, I think it's his job now to lose, but to your point, pinch hitter in Thursday series opening game, got an RBI double, gets his first start on Friday. He drove in 3 runs, including an RBI single and a sac fly. And then he adds another RBI in Saturday's series clinching win while scoring 2 runs. That was one of the biggest storylines. And I guess the other storyline had to be the performance of Eric Walker. I certainly didn't expect that at this point in time, but I'll take it and run with it.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. You're talking about what surprises us, what doesn't surprise us. I was surprised by Eric Walker's performance Saturday because, you know, he's one of those guys you can always trust, and I don't think he's ever looked bad a single game. He just always looks kind of off. So I'm never going to question them putting him in those spots, but he just looks so far off from the Eric Walker LSU hoped for. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. His velocity was down. All of a sudden, now it's up to 88, 89 again. That's a big sign for him. And his location was just pretty much dead on. His secondary pitches look good. I mean, I talked to Eric Walker on Wednesday, and he's one of the more just kind of real. He's not like not even in like a quote machine kind of way, but he's just very honest and blunt about the realities of his situation. And he was saying, he's just like, yeah, I'm not where I need to be. It's still this evolution. I still feel like I'm a little ways off. and all of a sudden you see him go out there and just look like an ace. And obviously you want to see more than one of those starts before you really say he's back or anything like that. But that was a huge bright spot of this weekend.
And the fact that the game was delayed about an hour and 19 minutes, and then Walker came back out and pitched three more scoreless innings. That tells me something, because normally when the rain comes that long, the pitcher, he's done. We're going to start fresh with somebody else. What does that tell you?
Well, I mean, yeah, it tells you. I mean, the two guys I've seen do that since I started covering LSU were Zach Hess in the SEC tournament last year against, I believe, Arkansas, and then Eric Walker. You know what that shows you? That's two of the more competitive, you know, really just composed guys on the team. You know, I think that tells you one thing about it. The other thing I'd say it tells you is it probably – if anybody can do that, it's probably somebody with Walker's pitching style. You know, I mean, I'm sure if Cole Henry had that happen, I'm not sure, you know, his 97 mile an hour stuff and all that would be as great after an hour sitting. But I bet there's something to the fact that Eric Walker's kind of, you know, precision style is probably best suited for that if anybody is.
He is Brody Miller, kind enough to join us. LSU baseball wins 2 out of 3, and they've got a big series coming up this weekend as a team just a half a game ahead of them. Texas A&M at 6-2 comes to town. I don't know if there's a better story in college baseball than the story of Chris Reed, the SEC co-player of the week. He led LSU to the series victory. All he did was hit 6-for-8, a .750 batting average, a double, 6 runs batted in, 4 runs scored. He walked 3 times, was hit by a pitch, a .769 on-base percentage in 3 games. There can't be a better story than him, right?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you've been around longer than anybody. I can't think of in my short life seeing any story quite like this. Just because it wasn't just like I was – I mean, it's a guy who was lazy and out of shape and all these things, gets cut, and all of a sudden – I don't know. I mean, there are great injury comeback stories. There are all these, you know, great. But this is a guy who just kind of woke up out of bed one day after like playing basketball at the UREC for 6 months and just became the best, the most reliable hitter on the team. I mean, that's just, you can't make that up. It's so absurd, and it just kind of goes to all the, and it just builds this legend of him, right? He's this fan favorite character who is just absurdly confident and, you know, and does these things despite not having a lot of these skill sets. And no, it's one of the more fun things to watch. I mean, you know, when you're in media this like long enough, you become numb to a lot of storylines. You see a lot of stuff, and you're like, all right, this is that again. This is just fun. I'm not afraid to admit I'm having a blast watching Chris Reed do this because it's just so entertaining, and it's also happening to a guy who you know is actually having fun with it. He's not taking himself too seriously. He's not being dramatic about his comeback story or what Paul Maneri did to him or anything like that. It's just, hey, this is fun. And he's somebody who I also think is kind of, at the risk of being corny, kind of learned to appreciate baseball a little bit more throughout all this. So
I think you're spot on with that. I don't think that's corny at all. I think you're right. I mean, it was taken away from him, and now he's back. And, boy, has he taken advantage of his opportunities. I mean, you've got Grambling on Tuesday, South Alabama on Wednesday, then you've got Texas A&M coming to town. So you know it's going to be Hess and Cole Henry and Eric Walker. How does Paul Maneri handle these two midweek games as far as pitching is concerned, in your opinion?
Well, I think the answer to that we will probably find out in about 35 minutes, purely because we'll talk to Paul Maneri, purely because the answer to that probably comes down to, are Landon Marceau and Chase Costello feeling any better? Because that is, I think, the big... Because if those two are healthy all of a sudden, and Riggs Threadgill as well, that's another one who's dealing with soreness. If those guys are feeling better, you feel... I mean, obviously, no matter what, that's a tough situation with two midweek games, one day off, and then the series. But if you don't have them, that is going to be brutal. I mean, they're going to have to... I would imagine they have to use some weekend arms to get through these two games in a little bit. I mean, I don't know how many arms they have to do it if they don't have those two. But if they have them, okay, then you have some guys you can actually, you know, ask to maybe extend a little bit and kind of take up some innings. But it would be those two. But if not, you got Mikhail Hilliard. You got, you know, Clay Moffitt continues to be scoreless through the season. It's kind of amazing what he's been doing. You know, I think you could probably turn to a guy like Trent Vintmeyer, who hasn't pitched since Thursday. He could probably eat up some innings.
Boy,
guys
good.
Like that.
Yeah, he was really good Thursday. He was really good.
I think, it's funny because I remember Nolan Payne, you know, talking on the radio a few times before the season about, hey, guys, Trent Whitmire is one of the guys who's looking a lot better this offseason. And I'm like, I'll believe when I see it. I mean, I just don't – and he's been right. He's looked fantastic for like most of the last month. So, yeah, I think – I mean, they'll obviously find a way, but they really need to have those two arms available.
You know what I'll believe when I see it? That LSU does RPOs in football on offense. That's why I'll believe that when I see it.
Ooh, that one I'll question you there because I mean, it all runs through. I mean, Joe Brady is the guy who is running a lot of this offense, and that is such a massive part of why he was brought in. So I think that is very real. Although here's what I will say: I don't think we're going to see any of it at the spring game.
No.
They are not showing us anything that we want to see at the spring game. It is. I was joking with him, you know, at the coach's clinic, and he's like, hey, man, if it's up to me, we'll line up under center and just run the ball up the middle 40 times and just not give away a single thing until the Texas game.
I'm with you. Or throw something out there that you know you're never going to do and just give people tape to study and work. I'd run every trick play known to mankind, whatever. I'm with you. I'm with you. That, of course, is this Saturday. So another busy week for LSU baseball, and you'll be at the ballpark for many, many an hour, my friend. I greatly appreciate the time. You take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, as always. Take care.
Okay. Brody Miller, kind enough to join us talking LSU baseball. We're going to continue that theme, but on a broader scope. Ben McDonald, who's the biggest surprise in the SEC? Who's the biggest disappointment? And much, much more as we continue on this Monday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local, 1037 The Game.
Well, we've got a couple of weekends under the belt when it comes to Southeastern Conference baseball. Of course, LSU bounces back in a big, big way and does a tremendous, tremendous job against Mississippi State, a team they just seem to have. They just seem to have the Bulldogs' number. But let's get a full perspective of the league in general with our good friend who travels around the Southeastern Conference and beyond, the former LSU Tiger, Golden Spikes Award winner, number one pick in the MLB draft, and now a tremendous analyst on so many networks I can't keep track of them, Big Ben McDonald. Ben, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Good, Jordy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific. How surprised were you, or were you, at the success LSU had over the weekend?
Well, I think you got to be a little bit surprised. There's no doubt about that. I mean, honestly, the Tigers weren't playing well, you know, going into the weekend at Mississippi State. Of course, they lost to McNeese in the middle of a week game, you know, and then, of course, they dropped the Friday night game, although they came back and made it a close game and had an opportunity there. But you didn't like their chances after dropping the Friday night game, you know. And honestly, going in, I thought the way they were playing, I said, man, they're going to be lucky to win one ball game over there.
Me too.
I really felt like, and I still do in a lot of ways, I think Mississippi State is one of the deepest teams, not only in the SEC, they might be one of the deepest teams in the country, you know, and that's a tough place to play over there, Jordy, as you know.
Yeah.
And so I was just hoping LSU could go in there and find a way to win one game. When they lost on Friday night, I was like, man, this is going to be difficult. But having said that, Cole Henry was good enough on Saturday night. He kept them off balance enough, and the bats really woke up for LSU at the back end of the game on Thursday, I should say, in game one. It kind of woke up, and then bats really poured it on in games two and games three. So I think Tiger Nation can take a breath now. Quit holding your breath and just take a little bit of breath. You know, because, look, there's a lot of expectations, as you know, and the Tigers were stumbling, and it is what it is, but the bad news is look, they don't catch a break with this at all. I mean, you got Texas A&M come in this weekend. Of course, got two midweek games this week, and the pitching staff is depleted a little bit with injuries, and so you wonder how they're going to navigate through the game tomorrow night and on Wednesday where they can try to win those games but yet save their guys for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against a very good Texas A&M team.
You mentioned LSU, the pitching staff. I'm not trying to throw gasoline on a fire here, but it just seems like year, and I may be wrong, it just seems like year after year there's more arm problems for LSU than any place I can recall.
Yeah.
I don't know what, what is the deal there? You pitched. What is the deal with that?
I don't know. No, it's hard to say. I don't think these injuries are occurring so much at school. I think a lot of these kids are showing up to school with some issues. If you go back to Nick Storrs, the big kid that was, you know, 6'7", and you know, stepped on campus 2 years ago and has hardly pitched for LSU, he came with problems. Easton McMurray, the freshman this year, the only left-hander LSU had on the staff, he had problems in high school coming in. So I think more than half of these kids are stepping on campus, you know, with some issues that some of the coaches, they sometimes know about, they sometimes don't know about. And it's been some strange injuries, you know. I mean, some injuries you just didn't see coming. Then you had a couple guys like Mikael Hilliard, who, you know, was banged up a little bit from the beginning. Marceau was healthy as an ox through fall and through spring, and yet here he is on the shelf, just like Jaden Hill is right now. So I don't know what to say about those guys who are healthy stepping on campus. And so it's just been a run of bad luck. I know Alan Dunn takes as good a care of those pitchers as anybody in the country does. I just think it's been a run of bad luck for LSU, you know. But hopefully Marceau's close. Hopefully Hill is getting there. I hear Storrs is coming, getting pretty close too. So that'll give them some extra guys to add some depth. I don't know if it changes anything with the rotation at this point, but at least it gives them some extra depth in you know, for the bullpen and for that pitching staff.
Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us. So you did mention Texas A&M. They're atop the SEC West. Because of travel curfews, Missouri and Texas A&M tied after 10 innings. They had to get on a bus or a plane and get out of there, but what is it about A&M? Are they a surprise to you this season?
Definitely. To me, they're probably the biggest surprise in the SEC, just because none of the five publications had them even ranked when the season began, but yet you turn around and here they are at the top of the West. And so it's been a surprise. Rob Childress, the head coach over there, does a wonderful job. They have two left-handers, and of course, we know LSU's batting lineup is left-handed heavy, and I'm very concerned for LSU this weekend. Just because John Doxakis, their Friday night guy, is really, really good. And Asa Lacy, their number two guy, is just as good. And they're both left-handed. So that's going to present a big problem or a big challenge for LSU hitters. The good news is the bats, you know, really got it going in the state series. So we'll see how that works out. But the lineup's not a great one for Texas A&M. And they do have a kid by the name of Braden Shoemaker that plays shortstop, Jordy. You'll really like him. Big 6'4" shortstop.
Wow.
Swings it left-handed. Going to be a first-rounder this year. He can play. He can really, really play. And so the offense is what I would say an average offense in the SEC with some guys that can hurt you. But the pitching staff is the strength of Texas A&M, no doubt about it.
All right. Layman's terms, in case whoever out there listening, why is it so difficult for LSU with left-handed hitters? Why are you concerned when they face left-handed pitchers?
Well, because LSU is a left-handed strong lineup. You know, we know the odds. You know, typically lefty on lefty, the left-handed pitchers do better, and righty on righty when the right-handed pitchers are throwing against the right-handers. So, you know, when you look at LSU's lineup, it's Josh Smith, you know, at the top. You got Duplantis, of course. You got Chris Reed, of course, all left-handers. Cabrera's left-handed. That's four. C.J. Willis, who made a big impression in Game 1 and played in Games 2 and Games 3, he's left-handed as well. So there's five left-handers for you right there. And if you include Beloso, who plays first base and DH a little bit, you could see, you know, LSU six left-handers in the lineup. And it's just tough sledding when you're facing lefty-on-lefty matchups, especially guys like Doxakis, who to me is probably the best left-handed pitcher in the league. And then this Asa Lacy is just as good. So it's going to present some problems for LSU. But the good news is that the bats probably are at an all-time high confidence after coming off the weekend this weekend. So we'll see what happens. Those right-handers are going to have to, you know, get going a little bit.
But is it because the left-hander, the breaking ball, goes so far away? I mean, what is it about a left-hander that is successful against left-hitting players?
Well, I mean, for one thing, you know, when you get a left-hander that steps across his body like a couple of these guys do, so he's almost starting the baseball right at the left-handed hitter. You know, the ball's coming almost right at him, and it is breaking across the plate at an angle. Both of these guys have really good breaking balls. That's going to present a problem as well. You know, so the history of baseball, you know, left-handed pitchers have always gotten out left-handed hitters better than they do right-handed hitters. And with LSU being a left-handed deep lineup, They would much rather face a right-handed pitcher, and the stats prove it this year. I mean, they're hitting about 60 points better this year against right-handed pitchers than they are left-handed pitchers.
Gotcha. Thanks for the primer there, Ben McDonald. He knows a thing or two about pitching, I would say. Who's been the biggest surprise of a positive nature? Who's been the biggest surprise of a negative nature this early on in the SEC race?
Well, if you're talking about a team standpoint, I mean, we talked about Texas A&M. I think they're the biggest surprise so far. I mean, I think LSU going into the weekend might have been one of the disappointing teams, especially from a team that was preseason, you know, number one. Georgia was picked to be really good, and so was Vanderbilt. And to me, they're the two classes of the Eastern Division. I don't see – I mean, I think it's going to be those two teams, 1-2, no doubt about it. Although Florida – like Ole Miss and like LSU this weekend, really stepped up their game. You know, Florida's kind of fallen out of things. They got a big sweep this past weekend against Alabama, so it kind of moved them back into the mix. And, you know, if you had to say somebody's a little bit of a disappointment, maybe Florida, you know, at 17-10, you know, going in this weekend, of course, 1-5 in conference. But when you sweep, I mean, it makes it a lot better. They're 4-5. You know, Ole Miss was huge this weekend. I mean, they went into Arkansas against a top-5 team, a team that hadn't lost a home series since 2017, and Ole Miss goes in and wins 2 out of 3, and so they're back in the race now in that Western Division, you know, and so it really just tightened up. You saw A&M at the top at 6-2-1, and Arkansas, Auburn, and LSU all at 6-3, and to me, Auburn is a little bit of a surprise, too. You know, I don't think anybody anticipated them being quite as good as they are right now, but they got a real Friday night guy in Tanner Burns. He's outstanding, and the offense has been a little bit of a surprise for Auburn this year. So that's kind of my surprises right now. I think everything else is, you know, Tennessee continues to pitch it really well, but the offense is just a little bit behind their bats. But from a pitching standpoint, Tennessee's as good as anybody.
So LSU right in the thick of it, just a half a game back of Texas A&M, setting up that huge weekend series. It's, I guess, Eric Walker appears. You never get too excited. You never get too down when it comes to baseball because it changes like the wind. But I've got to believe Eric Walker, that's his best performance in a while. Looks like he might be reverting back to his freshman year.
Yeah, I think so. They've been waiting for this to happen. I mean, the control has been really good for him. He feels good. But the velocity of what he hit, he never was a hard thrower, Jordy, but, I mean, there's a big difference still. You know, he used to pitch at 87 to 90, and this year he's been pretty much 84, 85 miles an hour. And so while you're not a hard thrower, 3 or 4 miles an hour does make a difference, obviously. And so the reports I got was his velocity was starting to tick up against Mississippi State. He's always been a great command guy and can throw that change up whenever he wants to. And, look, he's got ice in his veins, I mean, because he goes out there, and it's nothing against the kid, but he goes out there with really below-average stuff on a weekend rotation in the SEC, and he competes as well as anybody. And he knows what he does well. He doesn't try to do anything more than what he does well. And he just knows his body. He knows how to pitch. He proved that his freshman year when he was a freshman All-American in everybody's poll and won 9 games. And and so, you know, he's just a guy that wasn't supposed to be where he is, but because of the injuries to Marceau and because of the injuries to Jaden Hill, I mean, the plans for Walker was to be a midweek guy and gain his strength back and get a feel for the mound again and not so big pressure situations. But because of the injuries, look, he's had to step up. And I'm going to tell you, the kid's got ice in his veins, and he stepped up in a huge way. And I think this is only going to continue to give him more confidence, and the velocity will continue to come. And he's going to be a force. He's going to have to be because it's not like LSU has a whole lot of choices right now until they get some guys healthy.
Ben, here's my annual appeal. You bring up injuries. You're heavily involved with youth baseball. You're very active with that. There's parents out there that need to, you know, I don't know how many times we have to tell them the lesson of it's not how you start, it's how you finish. What do you recommend to parents with kids that play baseball, particularly pitchers, how to handle this travel ball and all the stuff that goes with it?
Well, in a nutshell, I would say I would tell them more is not always better. And what I mean by that is, you know, James Andrews, as you know, who went to LSU and graduated, he's considered the number one orthopedic doctor in the whole world. You know, he's been doing it forever. And I've talked to him many, many times, even through my surgery. He did one of my surgeries, and I continue to get information from him. But the biggest problem we're seeing with youth kids is they don't take the time off. And his big thing is you can go out and pitch for 6 months out of the year, 7 months out of the year. That's fine. Watch your pitch count. Watch your innings. Don't throw too many pitches, but you got to get away from the game for about 3 months every year. You got to put the baseball down. You got to go play football. You got to play basketball. You got to play soccer. You got to play something else. But if you keep that baseball in your hands 11, 12 months out of the year and you're continually throwing, you're about three times as likely to need arm surgery before you even get through your high school years for the kid that actually plays about 6 months of baseball and then goes and plays football or basketball or soccer, and he puts the baseball down for about 3 months, and then he comes back to it. And I think that's what we're making a mistake is. More is not better. Kids don't need to play baseball 12 months out of the year when they're 10 years old. They just don't need to do it. It's too much. You're going to burn them out, and you're going to risk injury. I'm just telling you. And for all these parents that think more is better, they need to reevaluate the situation and get their kids involved in multiple sports.
Yeah, everybody wants that scholarship. Everybody wants to be the next superstar that goes straight from high school to Major League Baseball. But, man, you gotta put the take the blinders off and see the world, man, and get don't wear your kid out. You got to be excited. Your Orioles had a pretty good start to the season. How about that?
Yeah, I'm happy for them. You know, that's why baseball, to me, Jordy, is one of the best games in the world because, I mean, how many times are the Orioles going to go into New York, you know, and going to the Bronx there and one of the best teams in all of baseball, and you win two out of three with a team that's, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but it's the truth, it's basically a Triple-A team, you know, and they go in there and they beat the mighty Yankees, and I love what Brandon High is doing, a new manager, and Mike Elias, new GM. They got a positive attitude going, and the kids think they can win right now. So it was a good start for the Orioles, and they're in Toronto starting tonight. And so I was happy to see them kind of get it going and get that first series victory under their belt. And I think they're going to be better this year. I think the attitude is good. They're going to be better. Now, I mean, like we talked about, if they improve 15 games, that is a big improvement from 1 year to next. They still lose 100 games because they lost 115 last year.
Yes.
You know, but it's a step in the right direction. It's kind of like playing in the SEC in football and baseball. You can't be kind of good. You got to be really good because the teams you're up against, and when you're up against the Red Sox and the Yankees every year in your division, it's a tough road.
It's tough. Now, I know you love baseball, but come on. That March Madness never fails to deliver. Those Elite Eight games were just spectacular. Come on now. You know that.
I'm telling you, I don't know that it got any better than that. I can't remember a year, and I didn't get to watch all of it like I wanted to because I was traveling a little bit. But what I did see, I mean, I did see the Duke game last night, and just wow. You know, it don't get any better than that. I mean, it's back and forth like two heavyweight guys with punches and outstanding plays, and it was fun to watch. You hate to see either one of those programs lose, but I tell you what, what a heck of a game. And all the games, like you said, were really good. And March Madness is, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's as exciting as it gets that you love basketball at all.
It never fails to deliver. And you never fail to deliver when we call upon you. You're the best. I know you're busy all week long, so have a fun time in the broadcast booth. And we greatly appreciate it, my friend. Take care.
I'll do it. Thank you, Jordy. Y'all take care.
All right, Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us here on the show. He's, don't wear them out. They're not going to be big leaguers when they're 10 or 11. Come on. Wake up. Come on. Wake up. We'll be back. Stay with us.
This is Tony Robichaux from the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
And we welcome you back, finishing touches of this Monday edition. Yes, Tom Brady did fake retirement after joining Twitter. I've never been a very good April Fool's guy, but those that are, man, congratulations. Good for you. Hope you pranked a bunch of people today. I really, really do. We're presented each and every day by DC's Little Capital Exxon. Frankie, what a great guy. He got no jokes. He just got great stuff. And a lot of stuff does he have right there at the I-10 exit, Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. What a great city Brobridge is. Friendliest people, and that's what you're going to find when you go into D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. The friendliest people, and they've got so much to choose from. Plan on spending a few minutes in there because you're going to be wowed by all the stuff they have, plus that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. I keep telling you about it. If you haven't had their cheeseburger yet, you've really missed out. It's well worth the travel, wherever you may be. It's well worth the trip just to try it. Dine in, get it to go. Like I always say, whether you're going 550 or 500 miles, D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon has everything you need to please everybody in your traveling party for however far or long, short you have to go. That's D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. All right, let's do a little history lesson because, yes, on this day, April 1st, we go back to the year 1972. No joke, no fool. The Major League Baseball Players Association strike lasted 13 days and was finally settled when owners and players agreed on an increase in pension fund payments and salary arbitration. The strike caused teams to have uneven schedules for the remainder of the season, but they got back to playing baseball after nearly 2 weeks on strike. On this day, April 1st, 1972. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you're having a great one. What a gorgeous day you're having. Look chilly, but a gorgeous day. You share it with happy 30th birthday to Brooke Lopez, longtime NBAer and a connection. He was at Stanford with his brother, coached by Trent Johnson, who later became the coach of LSU basketball, and that didn't end so well. Just like I'm not so sure how this LSU basketball is going to end. It was a happy birthday to the late Sean Taylor, former University of Miami, Washington Redskins safety. What a ball player. What a ball player he truly was. Yes. And Matt Lanter, actor. Happy 35th birthday to him. Special thanks to our guests, Amy Just, NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune, Brody Miller of the same, and Ben McDonald of the SEC Network for their thoughts dealing on a variety of topics. So we've got LSU baseball tomorrow as they take on Grambling. It's the throwback game, so you'll see some pretty cool unis, especially on the side of the Grambling Tigers. They'll really look sharp. It'll be interesting to see how Pulmonary deals with the week. It'll be very interesting to see if we hear any news on this Will Wade scenario. April 22nd is coming up. That's when the federal trial will begin. How long that takes, your guess is as good as mine. All I know is there's a lot, an awful lot of uncertainty in the program. I don't know how you recruit. I don't know what players are thinking. They won't know anything until LSU makes a decision one way or the other. And if they wait and wait and wait, what kind of coach can they get if it goes down that path? Time will tell. Whew. Time will tell. CD, outstanding job as always, my friend. Thanks to all of you for chiming in. Thanks to our great partners that make it possible each and every day. You're the best. Hope you have a great April Fool's Day. I really do. Come on back tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Who knows what we'll cover tomorrow? We'll see. Whatever's out there, we'll try and bring it to you in the most informative and entertaining way. Until then, I am Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.